alcoholic, gave me a test that proved that I needed to look at my problem with alcohol. And even then, I was not convinced that I was an alcoholic. In fact, once I got out of there, they wanted to keep me in that hospital that night. They wanted to hospitalize me for 2 weeks. They wanted to dry me out, and I wasn't going to have any of that. They assigned a counselor to me. I saw him one time, and that was fine. But I went home that night knowing the only thing that I truly wanted was my drinking. The only thing that I really, really wanted was in jeopardy. They wanted to take this away from me. So I came up with this ingenious plan. We're very good at having ingenious plans. And I decided that they think I'm an alcoholic. All I need to do is prove that I am not. And how would I prove I'm not an alcoholic? I would stop drinking. Everybody knows an alcoholic cannot stop drinking. Everybody knows that. So I'll stop for a while. I will see that counselor that was assigned to me twice a week. And I will do all of the things that they told me to do until I prove to them that I'm not an alcoholic and I can rub their nose in it and nobody will ever speak to me of this again. Well, as you can tell by the fact that I'm standing up here tonight, the plan did not quite work out that way. That was November 9th, 1987, and I have not had a drink of alcohol since then. And that's all due to because I started... Thank you. You are not applauding for me. You are applauding for the 12 steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that wholeheartedly, because that's where I ended up at, was in an AA meeting. I was seeing that counselor. He wanted me to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I read the first couple pages, thought I was way too smart for this book, and ended up giving it back to him. Self-centered, egotistical. He said, well, maybe you can go to an AA meeting. And I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I absolutely did not understand it, did not know anything that was going on there. Just got none of it. But I noticed that when I went to AA meetings, that made things a little bit better at home. Maybe I should mention at this point in my story that my wife was in Al-Anon by then. So she was kind of glad that I was at least visiting a 12-step program. And so I started to set up a real rigorous schedule of one meeting a week for myself. And I would go to a meeting near my home, and I would pick up one of those little pieces of literature every time I would go, and that was not to read it. I would throw that on the coffee table so that my wife could see it, and that was kind of my version of getting my paper signed, that she would see that I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. At no time did anyone at these meetings ever come up and get into my face and say, why are you here? What are you doing here? Do you belong here? They never came up and got into my face and said, you need to do this and you need to do that. For the first several weeks, they just let me sit there. I found out later they were keeping an eye on me, but they just let me sit there. And then slowly but surely, they started to approach me one person at a time. One guy came up to me and offered to take me to meetings. He says, it doesn't look like you have any friends. You come by yourself. Maybe we could go to a meeting sometime together. You know, and I still wasn't quite sure about this thing. If I wanted this thing, I hadn't accepted it yet. I'm still playing my game. I'm going to prove I'm not an alcoholic. But I started to ride to meetings with this guy. And I started to meet more and more people. And never did they ever push me into anything. Never did they even ask me if I was drinking. They just, you want to go to a meeting? Let's go to a meeting. And slowly but surely, this started to sink in. I met a lot of people. I met a lady who was virtually a neighbor of mine. She lived just around the corner from me and had children my age. And she and I, we spoke almost every time that I would go to a meeting. And I heard one time that she was going to lead a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I asked my friend who'd been driving me if we could go hear her. He later told me that was the very first time I ever asked if I could go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I wanted to go. So of course we went to that meeting. I had been going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for about 9 months at that point, always sitting in the back, never really dealing with anybody. They always ask at meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous if there's anybody new. I would never raise my hand because I did not want people to know I was there. I saw what happened to people who raised their hands, and they got a lot of attention. They got a lot of attention, and that was not something that I wanted at that time. So we went to that meeting that night, and like I said, I'd been coming around for 9 months, and of course the secretary asked, was there anybody new? I didn't raise my hand. Now I don't have to. 9 months, I'm darn near an old timer, you know. And they asked, was there anybody there for the first time visiting that group? And I did not plan to do this. The only thing I can figure out is my higher power was sick and tired of me being sick and tired sober, and he reached down and grabbed me by the back of the neck and stood me up in front of those people. And I said, hi, I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Jeff. I had never uttered the words alcoholic and Jeff in the same breath before. When I sat down in that chair, it raced through my mind, yeah, and your life's unmanageable too, pal. And that's how my higher power speaks to me. And in a smelly little basement in Newburgh Heights that night, I took the first step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I started to realize what powerlessness was. I started to realize what some of these things these people were talking about. That gentleman that had driven me to the meeting that night, he and I, we talked for a long, long time that evening. And basically, all of a sudden, Mr. Quiet, me, was Mr. Questions, and well, what's this about home groups, and what's this about the steps, and what's this about this, and this about that? And he said, stop. Let's just hang on for a second. You say something has happened to you tonight, let's work with that. Sounds like the first step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I stayed on the first step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for the rest of my first year, which is what I needed to do. I needed to understand that step. I needed to realize every morning when I woke up that I'm an alcoholic and I need to do something about my drinking problem. I was even taught in this program, when I introduce myself today, you'll hear a lot of people say, hi, I'm Jeff, I'm an alcoholic or whatever. I always say, I'm an alcoholic and my name is Jeff, because I have to put alcoholic first so that I realize that I am an alcoholic before I have a prayer of being the Jeff that I want to be today. That man eventually became my sponsor. He's still my sponsor today. He and I, we went through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, and we're still going through them. We go through them all the time. And my life is completely different, 180 degrees different. That oldest son of mine that started to pick up drinks at the age of 12 years old got sober at the age of 14 years old, and he is now in his early 40s, and he's not had a drink since. I will say that he does not attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous anymore. That is his business as far as I'm concerned. There's nothing I can do about that. I'm just so doggone glad that he is sober and doing the things he's supposed to do. That youngest boy that I mentioned that would always run and hide from his dad whenever his dad came home. He grew up, became a man, got married, started to have children. His very first son he named after me. He named him Jeff. That's not me. That's the 12 steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous working in my life. That wife that was ready to divorce me. Don't tell her I had to think about this for a second. A week from Sunday, in fact, we're going away next weekend, because a week from Sunday, we will be celebrating our 40th wedding anniversary. That's not me. That's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and 12 Steps. And like I said, she's in Al-Anon also. And sometimes she and I joke that we're so sick, 12 steps were not enough, we needed 24. And that's the truth. That's the truth. I would not trade my life for anything today. Is it perfect? No, it is not. Do I screw up things sometimes? Yes, I do. But I don't beat myself up over it anymore. I don't feel so bad about myself that I need to run to a drink to make me feel better. I stay sober one day at a time in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Tim, thanks so much for your story. Just do me a favor. Don't ever say I've only been sober for just 3 years. That's a hell of an accomplishment. It is natural for us to drink and drug day by day. It is as natural as taking a drink of water. This we have to work on in every day. That's a hell of an accomplishment. There is a person sitting in this room tonight that is 11 days sober, and that's so freaking fantastic, it's unbelievable. I didn't mean to call you out. I did. But you should be. Absolutely, you should be. I want to thank you all for listening to me, and God bless every one of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. That was great. I really appreciate your honesty as well from both of you guys. I'd like to introduce Sandra, who's going to come speak now.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sandra, and hi there. I've belonged to Families Anonymous for 6 years, and I have a son who is 32 years old, and he suffers from the brain disease of addiction. His drug of choice is opiates and heroin. We've been going through this for between 8 and 9 years, I believe. I got divorced from his dad when he was 3, and his dad had problems with addiction and alcohol. And his dad got sober at 55. God has saved my son many times from ODing. He's sober right now. Since April 1st, it seems, stay sober for like 2 months, maybe 3 months. Oh, he's living in sober living, and he has a job that he started Monday, and he goes to AA meetings. He tells me that the house that he's in is a good house, and everybody wants their sobriety. I am very blessed that my son is alive today. I have many friends that I know that have lost their loved ones. And I pray for them. My heart breaks for them. I have to share some really good news, though. I don't know if anyone knows about the CARA opiate bill. It passed the House of Representatives today with a landmark vote of 400-5. It's a huge step. It's becoming a law, and it's going to help, God willing, the heroin and opiate problem that's going on in our United States today. I don't know why it's taken so long. I believe we need to break the stigma of this addiction. And it definitely is a brain disease. They need to treat it like other illnesses similar to diabetes or cancer. I have heard every 11 minutes someone passes due to opiates or heroin. And I'm not sure if it's in the United States or just in Ohio. My son went to Catholic grade school. He played sports. He was an average student. He was smart. He followed the crowd, especially when he got to be, say, like sixth, seventh, eighth grade. He was supposed to go to Catholic high school, changed his mind, went to the public school. I believe the reason he began with his addiction is due to marijuana. Some drinking led him to other drugs. He came to us approximately 8 to 9 years ago, and he said, I need help. He was using the opiates at that time. And I called 211, first cry for help, the United Way. They referred us and gave me a bunch of phone numbers, and my son went to Rosary Hall, which is with St. Vincent Charity. Very nice, wonderful people. I think it took probably about, at that time, a week maybe to get in. He didn't have insurance. Today, Medicaid is a real blessing. If your children or your loved ones don't have it, you can get it. It's really easy to get. He was at Rosary Hall for maybe about 5 days, and I think when they released him, they gave him 2 prescriptions, which they would administer to him. He didn't really want to take any drugs. He just wanted to do abstinence, and he did an intensive outpatient, which he did not complete. He switched to heroin, I think, about 6 years ago, maybe. He was prescribed opiates by a pain management doctor, Bruce Feldman, who had like 3 pain med offices, and he wrote illegal scripts, and that doctor jumped off the Valley View 480 bridge and took his life because the government was after him. My son has been to detox so many times over the last 8 to 9 years. He's been to Stella Maris many times and inpatient treatment there as well. It's a wonderful program, they're wonderful people. He's been at the Lantern Center for Recovery, which is on Triscuit, ran by Tony Parker. It's a really good program, and they also have a great family support group, which meets 2 times a month, and real nice people. And they actually have a fundraiser tomorrow night. If anybody's interested, I could let them know about it. He's been to Harbor Light with the Salvation Army for detox, Casa Alma, which is a 40-day program. He's been to the Keating Center, East End, West Side, Treatment Works, Matt Talbot in Parma, which is a 2-month program, and he got let go there because he brought cell phone. And, you know, there's rules everywhere you go, and unfortunately, he's had trouble following rules. He's been to First Step Recovery of Warren for detox and for treatment 2 times over the last, 8 months. It's a 30-day program, which includes the detox. And then you go to 3-quarter or half housing, which is $350 to $450. And then the IOP program is 2 months, and he hasn't completed the whole 2 months of either of those. I believe treatment programs need to be longer, and that's hopefully maybe something that will happen out of the CARA Act or that we can work toward. The brain needs time to heal. Heroin and opiates destroy the receptors in the brain. In addition to the places that my son went to, he's gone to a couple of faith-based programs. TLC 911 is in New York, and there's a new place that opened in Cincinnati the end of December called the Heritage House, City on a Hill, and he recently was there. They are the very good people that are putting on Hope Over Heroin events. And one's coming in Cincinnati pretty soon, Columbus, if anyone wants to go. Addicts' brains become paralyzed, and they just want the drug. That's why they steal and they cheat. My son took credit cards, checks, jewelry, and tools and hacked them. He took the title from his cars to title places and hacked his car at least 3 times. He doesn't have his license now because he said 1 DUI. It's hard to forgive your loved one for stealing and violating you. He will never live with us. I don't believe that a 32-year-old should live with their parents. They need to grow up. He needs to grow up. He needs to get well. I remember being at a family group meeting out in Warren, and the man that was putting on the meetings, the family group said, "You need to grow up, Frank, you know." I don't recommend that addicts go home to their parents after treatment. I know we don't want them on the street, but there are places that they can go to. And, you know, codependency runs in line with hand in hand, I believe, with addiction. And after treatment, there are 3-quarter houses, halfway houses, sober houses. And I believe the difference between the 3-quarter and the halfway are the rules and the curfews. Codependency. We loved our loved ones. We can actually love them to death, which is horrible. We don't want to see them suffer or hurt because it hurts us. My son is my only child. We paid for rent, put deposits down on rent places to live. You know, when they're sober, you think, well, we can help, you know, because they're doing the right thing. Paid for car insurance, gasoline when he had his license. Healthcare, you know, cigarettes, clothing, doctor appointments, because you love them. I enabled for too many years, and I believe we have to detach with love. It's very hard. Addicts reach their bottoms when they're sick and tired of being in this lifestyle, and parents have to also reach their bottom, I believe. And a few times I've said I had to detox from my son. There are very great support programs out there. We have Families Anonymous. and which is for parents and their family members. It could be for any kind of addiction, gambling, drugs, alcohol. Many of our people in our group, sometimes their children suffer from other mental health problems, and they need support. Families Anonymous is an international group, and it's in many different cities around in different states. They actually have online meetings and online support groups as well. I belong to the group in Avon at Hope Church. They meet on Thursday evenings at 7 p.m. You know, my sister's a member of Al-Anon. Al-Anon's a great program. Nar-Anon is a great program. I also go to the Lantern Family Group meetings. They're located in Rocky River at the Unitarian Church. And they believe they start at 7 o'clock, the second and last Tuesdays. And you, the thing with the Lantern Family Group is you can bring your loved one with you, and whether it's a girl or a guy, and it's a great big meeting. I've been to Jim Joyner's meetings. He's a great guy. He has the family education and support groups. There's one in Bay Village, and I think there's downtown and one other location. Robbie's Voice is a great support group. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of Robbie's Voice, but Rob Brandt and his wife lost their son, Robbie, and they came out with Break the Silence, and they have a support group that meets in Medina on Monday nights, and great family. They have really tried to help everyone. There's so many great online support groups as well. If anyone wants to know about them, there's one out there right now, and the Addict's Mom is a great support group as well. So many times I've told my son that we're going to go to the funeral home and plan his funeral and mine, and I don't know if that's gotten to him at all. He did see the video of when I was on TV that made the news, and I think it did make a little impact. I've coped with my son's addiction, his illness, by praying to God, praying to the saints and the angels. St. Michael is a prayer that I think everyone should pray, because it's about the devil and evil. Pray the Serenity Prayer, go to meetings, reach out to friends, parents, and addicts as well. I've had a lot of good friends that are addicts. Do not be embarrassed. You're not alone. Make phone calls, email. Heroin and opiates, I believe, are the devil. We have to support each other through this. I believe it's a pandemic. I was told by someone that they felt it was a plague. And thanks for your time.
Thank you, Sandra. We have one more speaker tonight who's going to share a story, and then after Marilyn speaks, we're going to Becky's going to come up and introduce our support groups, and they're going to talk about their causes and their purposes. But before we get to that, I'd like to welcome Marilyn up to the front for her story.
I'm here because I have a husband that I've lived with for 45 years that's an alcoholic. He's still alive, and he's still an alcoholic. In 1992, my 18-year-old son committed suicide due to being an alcoholic. 2 years ago, in fact, it'll be 2 years this Sunday, May 15th, 1914, my youngest son, who is 32, died of a heroin overdose. These things don't happen to me. They happen on TV. I mean, it was just absolutely unbelievable that all these three people could have these problems. And it's been really hard to deal with it. At the time my son was doing heroin, my daughter was getting divorced. She was moved back home with her two kids. My son was divorced. He lived there with his two kids, plus two dogs. So we had eight people. So there was a lot of confusion, and I think because of all the confusion, things got missed that we might have found signs. We might have seen more signs. It was just horrible. I'm the one who found him. And nobody should ever have to find anyone, let alone their child, dead. I knocked on his door, and he didn't answer, and I yelled his name. And we have those kind of doors you can just poke a comb in it, and it opens. And there he was, sitting on the bed with his head down next to the nightstand with a needle in his hand and a tie around his arm. His hands were ice cold. His back was still warm. So I called police, and they came out, and they were there for 3 hours investigating. After the police left, I went in his room and I sat on the bed and looked around. And right next to his bed on the nightstand, there was a little piece at the end of an envelope. And I picked it up and I looked at it. And what it was in there was heroin. And then about a month later, when we went to throw his mattress away, all the needles came shooting out from between the bed. And to this day, I guess, I hold some resentment with the detective squad in Parma. They were there for 3 hours. What did they do? This overwhelming upset over heroin, and I never knew a thing about heroin, not a thing. I came from Parma. My whole family came from Parma. I mean, even the better side of Parma, the newer side. But I couldn't stop crying to the point for almost a year and a half I didn't wear any makeup because it would just cry off and it would be a mess. Let my hair grow gray because it's just not an important thing in my life anymore. I got very ill. I had a thyroid problem, which they say very easily could be caused by stress. And I also ended up in the hospital with streptococcal pneumonia, which also can be caused by stress because your body is not fighting the way it should. And I almost died. And I just can't possibly explain to people what it's like. I mean, two children we found, two of our sons. I have a daughter who blamed it all on me. It was all my fault because the police had been out at our house a week before because I caught him with a needle. And the police kept, we asked him, do you want to check his room? Because we wanted him to find the paraphernalia. And they kept going, oh, you don't want us to do this. You really want to do this? And it was almost like they were saying, don't do this. So we didn't. And I've heard that happen to other people, too. I don't know if it was a lazy night or I have no idea why that happened that way, but it did. But I can tell you that I'm a real stickler against heroin now. And I really, it was you that was the one that's clean? I could give you a hug. I've threatened all my nephews and grandsons with a cast iron frying pan if they get near anything. I have 4 grandchildren. One's 18, 2 are gonna be 15, and 1 is 12. 2 of those are my sons. They don't have a dad. My granddaughter had no dad to go to the father-daughter dance with. I mean, everything is gone. They luckily are old enough to remember their father, but they also are old enough to remember a lot of bad things with their father. And it's really sad, and because it is a brain disease. Addiction is a brain disease. Every one of those grandchildren has every chance in the world of having the same problems. And we talk to them constantly because every side of our family, my daughter-in-law, my ex-son-in-law, every side of the family has addiction problems. So, I mean, they're almost like damned before they start. So, I mean, even at 12 years old, we already talk about it very openly. We go to the cemetery and talk about it. I mean, we feel we don't have any choice. My one grandson, who's going to be 15, broke his leg playing hockey, and his body twisted, his foot stayed still. So they had to put a pin in his leg, and they gave him enough Vicodin for a couple days. And after 2 days, my daughter quit giving it to him because he seemed to like it. 2 days. Never had anything before in his life, 14 years old. So he went to the ibuprofen, and you know, it was funny because all of a sudden, he was at my house at the time, and I said, "You need an ibuprofen?" "No, I'm fine." So suddenly he was fine when he wasn't going to get the Vicodin. My son, I think he started on Vicodin also. He had surgery in his elbow, and he had 3 surgeries, and at that time they were just passing on out drugs. We went through a period of time where they were just giving them. Now they're cutting way back, and there's got to be some happy medium because, I mean, people with broken legs do need something, but, you know, you don't need 10 days worth. So, really, I mean, it's just such a hard thing because once it starts, it doesn't go away. And most people who try heroin die. Sooner or later, they die. And if it's your mom or whoever it is, bug them. Tell them how much you love them. Hug them and kiss them. Tell them you want them. Because just that easily, you get up one morning and find out they're not breathing anymore. So thank you for your time, and I hope I've helped anybody, I mean, to realize what it's like. Nobody should bury their child. They're supposed to bury us. And I can't get over that one, so thank you very much.
Okay, at this time, if the people that are going to represent the various support groups could come and bring your little orange card, that'd be awesome, and take a place at the table. And we'll start with Jeff from AA. Did Dave A. from Noranon make it tonight? Okay. Right. And what they'll do is they'll each have about 3.5 minutes to share with you what their program is about and what you might expect and how you, and we encourage you to share this information with people that you know could benefit but maybe didn't have the courage to come tonight or didn't know about it. So please feel free to share any information you have here with other people.
Okay, Becky says I have about 3.5 minutes to tell you what I've been doing for the past 30 years of my life, and I'll do that as quickly as I can. It's purpose of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, in my mind, is to pass this thing on to other alcoholics so that they can achieve the type of life that we have gotten through it. You know, in our 12th step, it says that we need to pass this thing on. And sometimes people don't understand why someone who's been around 28, 29 years, why does he still feel like he needs to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous? I will always be an alcoholic. I will never be cured of alcoholism. But because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the alcoholism within me has been arrested one day at a time, and I don't find it necessary to pick up a drink. And consequently, because of that, I am grateful, and I want to pass this on to others who show up at our meetings to see if they need what we have or not. The groups themselves, there are several types of Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. There are lead meetings where one person will stand up and tell his story, somewhat like I did earlier, except for usually a longer period of time. And there are also group discussion meetings where a topic may be thrown out, and during that group, everybody will be given a chance to speak on that topic if they wish. There are all men's meetings, there are all women's meetings, there are mixed meetings, there are meetings where they are closed meetings and they only want people who have a problem with alcohol, because sometimes people have a problem around others until they get used to, you know, what they're doing, so they would rather be with other alcoholics. And then there are open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous where anybody can come at any time for any reason if they have an interest in a meeting and what we do. And they are, these different classifications of meetings are spelled out in the meeting schedule books as, you know, open, closed, or whatever. What you can expect when you show up at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I think you sum that up in one word, and that's love. The people of Alcoholics Anonymous want nothing but to help another alcoholic in the way that we were helped. I know that's what I was taught when I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would thank them. You know, I would say, you know, thank you for the ride to the meeting, or thank you for sitting and talking with me for a little while, or thank you for explaining that step to me that I didn't understand. And more times than not, the only thing they would say to me was, don't thank me, just pass it on to the next person. And that's what we believe in wholeheartedly, is just passing this thing on to anybody who wants it, never forcing it on them. That does not work. As I told you in my story, and I ran through my family like crazy, they went to Marymount Hospital to get help for me. And they told my family at that time that we can't help Jeff till he walks in that door himself. But they could help them, and that's how they got turned onto the program of Al-Anon and Alateen and things like that. So quickly, Becky. So quickly. It does, doesn't it? Sounds good. And I have 20 seconds, and that means... But it was talking to you, so it doesn't. That doesn't count. And what has the program meant to me? It has meant my life. It is giving me, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, it has given us a life back. And how to find a meeting, stop by and see me afterwards. I'll be out there at the table and I'll tell you how to find meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you very much.
Good evening. I'm an addict named Clay, and I'm a member of Cocaine Anonymous. The purpose of Cocaine Anonymous is a 12-step program to help addicts recover from addiction. We have an all-inclusive first step, which is admitted we are powerless over cocaine and all other mind-altering substances, and our lives become unmanageable. How the group operates: we have discussion meetings, we have lead meetings. Most of the meetings on the west side of Cleveland here Our three discussion meetings are the last week of the month is a lead meeting. The rest of the months are discussion meetings. What a person can expect, like Jeff just said, when you come into a meeting, it's like you find a new life. You find friends, you find hope, you find a way to recover from the terrible disease of addiction. What the group has meant to me, it's made, basically given me a life again. I was introduced to drugs, became terrible with it about the age of 17, struggled till the age of 25, and it ruined my life. My family didn't want me around at the end anymore. They wouldn't answer the phone. They just did not want me anymore. And now I have a wonderful relationship with my family, as well as with the members of my program. And to find a meeting of our program, you can go to ca.org. That's the international website for CA. And it lists all the meetings throughout the world. I've brought schedules tonight for the Cleveland area that lists. We have around 40 meetings in the Cleveland area right now, and 28 meetings besides that, which are in treatment centers and jails. And I have schedules for that, and I also brought cards with our helpline, which can connect you with an addict 24 hours a day if you ever need help. I've also brought some literature with me tonight if anyone would like some literature that discusses the different things of our program. And with that, I'd just like to say thank you.
You didn't tell us we were going to stand up and talk, just for the record. Hi, I'm Tammy. Yes, it makes a huge difference. I'm here with Families Anonymous. Sandra brought it up before. We are basically a support group for people who love someone with either mental illness or drug addiction. The majority of those of us that are in the rooms when you come are parents of addicts. I found Families Anonymous in 2002. I don't know how long ago that was, but that was because I had a son with serious mental problems. So I walked through the doors, not because of alcohol or drugs, but because I had a little boy who was out of control, and I needed somebody who understood. He grew up and found drugs to cope. I went back to Families Anonymous again. Purpose of our group is basically to provide each other support and sanity. When you're a parent, brother, sister, neighbor, loved one, coworker of someone who is addicted to drugs or alcohol, your life becomes unmanageable. I can speak mostly as a parent, and as a parent, it was my job to help my kids, and I was supposed to fix everything. And you can't fix it. You can't force them to get help, because they will go get help and they will come back out and they will use again because they don't want help. Once they want it, they'll do what they have to do to stay sober. In the meantime, support groups keep us sane so that we can go to work and function in society. Without Families Anonymous, I really truly don't know where I would be because I was a bit of a mess. What you can expect, like both those gentlemen said, love. You're gonna walk through the doors and see people that truly know where you are, what you're doing, what you're living, what you're feeling. No judgment. What it's meant to me obvious is probably fairly obvious. And how to find a meeting, we have a table out there and there's a bunch of these yellow brochures. All the meeting locations, we don't have as many as AA and Al-Anon, but all the locations are in here. We're online, we have a helpline, somebody answers the phone. If you just feel like, you know, my saying is you're jumping on the crazy train, you need to make a phone call, phone a friend, and have them help you get off. And we'll be here for more questions.
Hi, I'm Linda, and I'm representing Al-Anon. I've been a member at Al-Anon for 6.5 years. This is very similar to the Families Anonymous. Tammy and I have talked about it many times. But with Al-Anon, your only requirement is you have to be a friend or a relative of someone who's an alcoholic. You have to know someone, or it could have been someone in your past. It could have been your parents. It could have been a sibling. It doesn't have to be an active drinker. It can be someone that hasn't drank for years. But what you find is, and what we find is, as someone who loves an alcoholic, our lives are affected too. We lose our sense of self-worth. We lose a lot of ourselves through alcohol, the addiction of alcohol, the disease of alcohol. And Al-Anon helps us to regroup and to find ourselves again and to find our serenity. At our meetings, we do readings, we have discussions, and many times the discussions lead to, things that we didn't know were going to come out at a meeting. Very useful tips. Different people talk. We encourage people to talk. They don't have to talk if they don't want to, but it gives everyone an opportunity to voice their experience and any of the problems that they might have. And we don't make anyone talk. I sat for a couple of years and didn't do any talking. So more can be gained sometimes by listening. If you go home from a meeting and you hear something new or you learn one thing, then that's really a good goal. For me, Al-Anon has meant my serenity, finding myself again, liking myself again. I was married to an alcoholic, and my son is an alcoholic. And I at first thought I was going to go find how to fix my alcoholics, but it's really a program for me, and helped me get my serenity back, helped me find myself again, and helped me like myself again. We are on the website. You can go on www.alanon and find meetings. I attend the Brunswick New Day Al-Anon group meeting that is on Monday nights, but there are meetings here in Strongsville. You can always find a meeting when you need it. So I encourage you to go online and find a meeting and visit several meetings if you want to. But I think that you'll find the peace that you've been looking for if you have the effects of alcohol in your life or have had the effects of alcohol in your life. Thank you.
Hi everyone, my name is Shelley, and I have the joy of being an Alateen sponsor. Alateen is part of the Al-Anon family groups, and it is a fellowship of the younger members. We call them teens. Sometimes we take them a little younger than that. They're usually the child or grandchild or sibling of an active addict or alcoholic. Their lives had been affected by someone else's drinking or drugging. They come together in a meeting for safety and to be around other like-minded kids. Their problems are a little bit unique, and they share their experience, their strength, their hope, how they manage different situations. They discuss what's difficult in their life. They learn more effective ways to cope, because in their home life, they may not have the most best coping mechanisms displayed. They try to make better choices because of what they hear in the group and are able to discuss among themselves. They encourage each other, and they help each other understand the principles of the Al-Anon program. I looked online, and there in the Northeast Ohio area, there's like 70 AA meetings, maybe 30 Al-Anon meetings, and maybe this many Alateen meetings. You know, with all the addicts and alcoholics out there, they had to have birthed some kids. And the children, the grandchildren, there's a lot of kids affected. The only problem is most of them don't drive. So it's very dependent on having their family members bring them to the meetings. We work on the slogans, the steps, just like AA and Al-Anon. We have, each Alateen group has an adult member, and they are over 21 years old. They must have been in the program greater than 2 years. Each year we have to renew, saying, I want to be a sponsor. Every 5 years, we get fingerprinted by FBI. Twice a year, we attend different statewide events to discuss what problems have occurred, what legalities are out there, and how we can better serve the teenage population. When someone asks me, is my kid, would Elatine be good for them? My simple answer is someone's drinking or drugging bugging them? If so, yes, the program is for them. I'd like to end with the non-Elatine Declaration. When anyone, anywhere reaches out for help, let the hand of Al-Anon and Elatine be there, and let it begin with me. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Dave, and I'm here representing the addict parent. I'm a father of two children in recovery, and by the grace of God, one has about 3.5 years, and one is coming up on his second year. So certainly, for today, things are good. I'm going to echo some of the same sentiments that I heard from Family Anonymous ladies, and the key element is for us parents and grandparents and even siblings to have some semblance of sanity as we live in this uncertainty and craziness. You know, the adage of we didn't cause it, we can't control it, and we can't cure it is so true. But in our loving way, as we want to make things easy and, you know, enabling and rescuing, it becomes our life focus, and it really is all too consuming. So what the addict parent is in this day of social media, it's a Facebook page that you can join, and certainly with social media and some of the challenges with that, it's a little scary, but we have what we call administrators who screen everybody who wants to join, and it's a safe place to be. And certainly everyone is on their phones doing, looking up CNN, ESPN, and everybody is on that thing pretty much several hours of the day. What you'll find is, although circumstances of people may be somewhat different, there is so much in common that you have and you can identify. And, you know, you're in a vacuum and so many times you don't know what to do and you're scared. And through this page, you have so many different resources of people who have lived and are living in this addiction, and it's very helpful. You know, the focus is to share our burdens, and you know, you have some sense of hope at least. Again, we don't know what the outcome is going to be of our loved ones, but the key thing is to get ourselves healthy. And quite honestly, this group is really spearheaded by a bunch of ladies, and our wives are actually in Florida doing a little seminar with the group. So Rich and I, myself, stepped in, and it's important that I do this for my own well-being. And it's important that the males get involved as well. Let's see. There's about, I think, 1,300 members. And 200 members of people that have lost loved ones, and I think about 75 grandparents, and there's like 3,000 people that are actually following the page. So again, I invite you to come to our table, pick up some literature, and thanks for your time.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and I am an adult child of alcoholics. I didn't know that until January of this year, when I attended my first meeting right down the road here in North Royalton at Holy Royal Redeemer Lutheran Church, actually. A question that I've had a tough time answering is, what is an adult child of alcoholics? And what it is it's the adult version of Alateens, pretty much. Once you turn 18, it gives adults a place to go and get support. It's very much a 12-step program, self-help, where what an adult child actually is someone who responds to adult situations with self-doubt, self-blame, or a sense of being wrong or inferior, which are all learned behaviors in childhood. Pretty much I was like Jeff's youngest child, where there was someone, my father was an alcoholic, and I learned these survival traits to protect myself, basically. And in that, I took those into adulthood, and I didn't know how to interact in certain situations. When I would be confronted by people, I would be scared and kind of always give my power away. And I didn't even realize I was doing that. And as a teenager, I had depression. I turned to alcohol and drugs, all because I felt like there was something wrong with me. And all the antidepressants and therapy really didn't help me at all. And until I went to this meeting, I felt like I found my home, where I found answers to questions I didn't even know I had. So it's been a very healing experience for me. And what we do in the meetings is we go through a 12-step workbook and work through a lot of these survival traits that we learned, how to cope, the coping mechanisms that we learned as children. We kind of learned how to figure out what those were and move beyond them, and in a loving, supportive way. One of the meetings, there's meetings here in North Royalton in Akron, and there aren't many meetings. There's a few that you can find on the website, www.adultchildren.org. And I'm really glad to be here representing the group, because not a lot of people know about it. And if me being here can help one other adult child make better choices in their lives, then I'm glad to do that. So thank you so much.
So now we're going to go into 25 minutes or so of Q&A, and if anyone has a question, please raise your hand and I'll come to you. And if you have it for a certain person on the panel, please up front request that that's who you're asking. Otherwise, if it's a generic one, we'll just see which one of them wants to jump on it.
Mine's for the gentleman from Cocaine Anonymous. Do they do other drugs also, or is it pretty much specific to cocaine?
No, our program has an all-inclusive first step. We deal with all drugs, alcohol. We have members who call themselves alcoholics, members who call themselves coke heads, crackheads, heroin addicts, all different members in our program.
Along the same line, do you find that with AA and anyone that can speak from an NA, do you have addictions that cross over into your meetings regularly?
AA is a little bit different when it comes to that. We have what we call a singleness of purpose. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we try to concentrate on alcohol. I've never seen anybody thrown out of an AA meeting for mentioning cocaine or any other drug, but they do like to go by a singleness of purpose and just basically deal with alcohol.
My son is 24. His drug of choice was opiates, and he goes to AA meeting it helps him. It doesn't matter that he's a drug addict. It's the process and the camaraderie that he finds there that works for him. So they don't talk about it, but anybody's welcome.
And I'm also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the drug that took me down, like I was talking about when I was up there, was obviously opiates and heroin. But I believe that alcohol is what created all this. I am definitely an alcoholic before I do anything. I drank in excessive from a very young age. And the way that we look at it in Alcoholics Anonymous is if I start drinking again, that drinking is going to cause me to do bad decisions to get me back to what I did in the long run.
Anybody else have questions? Hi, my name is Charlotte. I just want to thank all of you. This has been very helpful. We have a son who is now in rehab who overdosed on heroin, and we're really scared for him when he gets out of rehab. He's in residential treatment. We're really scared for him. He's supposed to be going into sober housing. I was just wondering if anybody can give us some tips as family members as to where we can help. They're being real helpful in helping him, but any tips for us as parents? Because we don't want him to come home. We're afraid for him to come home. Recommendations or tips that we have. Thank you.
Do you go to a support group?
No.
Okay. Where do you guys live? I think there may be Families Anonymous in Garfield. Is it on the list, Tim?
I don't have my glasses up here.
I have my.
I recommend that you find a support group for yourself. It's a son, you said? Our biggest fear is when they come home. We even have brochures about when the addict comes home. You need to take care of yourself, and finding a support group for you is what's going to ultimately also help him. Whether it's a Families Anonymous group, and I attend a Friday night that is in North Royalton, at a Methodist church in North Royalton. We have them scattered, there's just not as many. But you have to learn how to worry about you and take care of you, and let him find the people to help him take care of him. And it can be an Al-Anon meeting, it doesn't have to be Families Anonymous, just something, okay?
How old is your son? And first time in treatment?
Yeah.
And where is he at? Which group?
Matt Talbot.
When my son was at Matt Talbot, there was, I believe if you finished the program, there might be grants out there for 3 months. They could go to a sober house. Did they tell him anything about that? Have you heard?
He talked about them paying for 3 months.
Yeah, and then they can do intensive outpatient. And hopefully, you know, that'll complete. If not, I know of a couple programs that are Christian programs. The one that my son went to in Cincinnati, it's actually 6 months. And you fill out the application online, and they actually put you to work building furniture at a Christian store, and it's free. You know, so you don't have to worry about that. They feed you, and it's a fellowship program. You'll go to church. And it's not 12 steps, like, and that's kind of why my son wanted to leave there when he went there. But, you know, if this might be an idea, or there's another place called the Good Samaritan Inn. So if you want to talk to me, I can tell you about those. Also, Robbie's Voice, on their website, they have a MAP scholarship. So there's for girls or guys, and you can apply for that scholarship, and they'll, like, put you in touch with, I don't know if it's Origins, it's a place in Texas. And they get free counseling for the addicts and for the parents. So, and, you know, some of these family groups, you know, if you want to go with your son to the Lantern family group with him, it's like free counseling, actually, or even the ones that Jim Joyner has. So, you know, that's another one. Jim Joyner, there's one in Bay and downtown, and then I can't remember the other one. Do you remember, Tim, the other group? So, you know, I can give you my number, and you know, you can call me anytime. I can help you because I've been going through this for a long time.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
Anybody else have a question?
I'm just wondering if someone could tell me the exact physical things that you actually see in a heroin addict. I mean, my son was a user, and he's a recovering, but there are things I know I missed. And, I mean, shaking hands or whatever, you know, anything.
Well, I can tell you, in our house, we kept finding the ends of envelopes, like where you cut off the end, and that's how they would deliver it, in this little tiny envelope. And I would find them all over the house, and I'd just, you know, yell at my granddaughter for cutting up envelopes. Eyedroppers are another thing, because heroin can be dropped in your eyes. And I did not know that. I found that out at another meeting. Also, like pot and heroin, they put in to cigarette the cellophane. So, I mean, you want to look for these kind of things. My son, oh, spoons, yes. When your teaspoons start disappearing, really question it, because we thought the kids were taking them to school and not bringing them back. He was using them, because you have to put the heroin and water in a spoon and then hold it over a candle to melt it. And so if you start seeing candles, and they're not battery operated, you know, anywhere around, my son would take a piece of foil and put it in the foil. And I didn't, like I say, I didn't have a clue about any of this. I learned more since he's died than I ever knew before. All of a sudden, his belts and ties were all real neat. They were just there right in front of the closet because he was using them. He was using them as a tourniquet. So, I mean, you know, I hope that kind of helps you. Oh, yeah, eyes roll up. They, a lot of times, their eyes roll back in their head. That's how I knew that Tim was on heroin when he was young. They nod out. Yeah, they nod out. They'll just all of a sudden be sitting there going, and they're asleep.
And I know my brother was cocaine, not heroin, but he lost weight. So when he was on a drug run, he lost so much weight, and the first session that we had, I showed a picture of him in January of 01, and then he died 3 weeks later of an overdose, and the picture was so amazingly different. So he had lost that much weight in a matter of 3 weeks that you wouldn't have even recognized him being the same person. And he was a different person when he was using. His personality of who he truly was showed up when he was straight, on the times he was straight, and that was a true him that you would know. Then when he would be on a drug run, the who, like Tim talked about, that he was not himself, that would be him on a drug run. You wouldn't hear from him. He would go under, I called it going underground. He suddenly would quit communicating and be gone. His was weight loss and just kind of vacating. Anybody else? Tim, what about you? Because do you have any tricks for the folks out here?
One of my... You know, because obviously the further I got into my drug use, it was a lot easier to hide it from everybody, but maybe I'm just not talking to it. I do that when I'm leading meetings, too. One of my telltales was my voice would get super raspy, and your eyes would be pinned, like if you were, like super stoned, but your eyes just get, like, really pinned. And like I said, my voice would become super raspy every time I did it. And that was how I got caught every time, was the raspiness. And then the orange caps to the needles, Q-tips missing, spoons, obviously theft of stuff, weight loss, like you said. You know, I've gained 100 pounds since I've been sober. I think, Marilyn, you covered a lot of it, too. Like in early usage, you know, the eyes rolling in the head. Asking them excuses. Oh, the excuses that we would say. My truck probably broke down 15 times before and never fixed it. My stepmother gave me money to fix my pickup truck 15 times, and that was the truck that I was talking about. My wife came and picked me up, and that was still broke down.
Do they itch a lot? I mean,
that can be part of it too. Yeah, like kind of like a yes, definitely.
And what about you start having things that are no longer around because they're stealing them from you? Yeah.
Yes. This is more of a comment, but I wanted to tell the lady who mentioned that she believes that heroin and drugs are straight from the devil, I wanted to tell you thank you, because that's a good way for us to try to combat it. And I wanted to remind everyone, right at the very beginning, even, of course it went off now, in Genesis, the Lord was speaking to Cain, and he said to him, "Why are you angry, and why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, remember," basically, Satan is crouching at the door, and its desire, it says sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it. So it's just... It's not easy to master that, and I get that part, but to give it the label that it deserves is one good step in the direction toward helping all of us understand that it can be mastered, and we can help each other to do that. So I just wanted to tell you thank you.
Any other questions?
One thing I'd like to tell you as far as the devil goes, I was told by my priest, I'm Catholic, they did come to my house and blessed my house, and I was told that the devil doesn't go after bad people. The devil goes after good people. He's already got the bad ones. So, you know, keep that in mind.
All right, I've got a question. Do you have something you're going to add? Go ahead.
I really think, is this on or not?
Yeah.
Our government taking God away from us out of schools, prayer, you know, I don't know how many years now when they brought the opiates in because of trying to, the stigma of, we can't have our patients suffer with pain. Probably you've all heard that. So let's give these pills out. I mean, I remember when my son had his wisdom teeth out, 5 Percocets, they gave him for $5. And what did he want to do? Eat them. I think he was 19. But if we could just bring back even a little bit of religion, I mean, and we have to start when they're young, because it's, in my eyes, the kids 6th, 7th, 8th grade turn away from God, and maybe even through high school and a little bit until they maybe want to get married and get married in a church. Whatever church it is, and another place that people can go is Grace Church. They have a program for similar to the AA program. There's a few, lots of meetings there, and I think there's a meeting on Fridays, and it's also 12 steps. I just thought of that. I had a book on that, Revelation, I think they call it. But, you know, we've got to hold on to our younger generation, because 25 to 35, so many people are dying, you know, and... I told my son the other day, I said, you know, I wish I could go be an undercover person and help bust these people. And he said, Mom, they would know you are not a person like that. So you can't do that, Mom, you know. So,
Becky, can I say something?
That's what my granddaughter wants to grow up and be when she, you know, is old enough. She wants to be an undercover police person for looking for drugs.
Do you guys find that the meetings that you have, do y'all find that the meetings have different personalities? For example, within the FA, Families Anonymous community, if someone is going to go attend one meeting and it didn't feel right, do they take on their own personalities, and same with like AA or CA, and so you would want to go try another if you don't, like... How do you go about attending a meeting and getting a feel for it before you make a decision on, one, if it's right for you or if that meeting is right, and maybe it's another meeting that would be a better fit?
We have special things that we say to newcomers when they come to the group for the first time. And the big key is that we ask that you attend 6 meetings. It can be 6 at the same place, or you can just pick a place and go, because all of the meetings will have a different feel, just like the AA meetings have different, the Al-Anon meetings have different, and you need to find a meeting where you feel comfortable and like you are home. You are with people that you can open up to and bear your soul and know that you're comfortable with them and you're safe. I feel the need to remind everybody in the room that the enemy that we are all facing is actually addiction. Alcohol. There's alcohol, there's drugs, there's all kinds of drugs. But the bottom line is the addiction was there first. The first two beers you were in. My son's first hit of a joint, he was in. So the addiction is in there, and the addicts find whatever their drug of choice is. And whether we're the addict or whether we're the family member or the friend, the anger needs to be at the addiction and helping get people the help. And that's all I'll say, sorry.
And yeah, she's absolutely right. It's the same with not working. Okay, get it closer. With meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you don't like a particular meeting, maybe try it a second time or even a third time. I just recently moved into Medina County from, I got sober on the east side, and I attended a meeting here in Strongsville that just, I did not get good feelings from. I did not get good feelings from the people, and I thought, okay, you know, well, the heck with them, and I started to go to other meetings. About a year later, I went back to that same meeting because my sponsor was leading there, and I went to support him, and that meeting could not have been friendlier towards me. So what was the problem? Was it the meeting, or was it me that night? So she had a very good suggestion, I think, and try it more than once. But especially when you're talking about Alcoholics Anonymous, you've got in Cuyahoga County over 1,000 meetings a week, so you'll have plenty to choose from.
My question is for Tim. Tim, I'm sorry I came in a little bit late with your talk, and I'm sorry about that. My son is a heroin addict, and he is currently incarcerated. When he comes out, he does have a list of conditions that he'll have to complete, and it's been his history that when he has to meet with his probation officer or when he has a court date, he relapses right before it. So I guess my question to you is, I don't know, and I don't know if it's appropriate for me to ask, but my concern is, because heroin can carry, once someone overdoses, any of the paraphernalia and any of the residue found on any of the instruments can lead to a felony charge. And when they're incarcerated, even though it says they have access to AA and NA recovery materials, that has not been our experience. So what would your advice be for him when he comes out? He is hoping to go to the Lantern for 3 months, but he gets very nervous and very overwhelmed when they'll give him an ankle bracelet, and he's very upset by that. So he's trying to get well and be healthy, but he's been given the message that you are a criminal and you are a bad person. So just wondering from your perspective how we can help him with that.
You said he's recommended to go to the Lantern. The Lantern is a wonderful place. Tony Parker he's a good friend of mine. Him and my sponsor are best friends. I mean, you have the Lantern, you have the Keating Center, which are all right in the same area right there. And the Lantern is a very, very good place. I mean, very clean, very structured. And basically what they do is try to, you know, nobody's going to judge you from walking in there. Like, I did this, I just came out of prison. I don't know, is he in prison or county? He's in county. I mean, nobody's going to judge you. I mean, we're all, when we go to these treatment centers, we're all the same. We don't look at people like, well, you just got out of jail. I mean, we support each other. It's a family. I mean, they call it Lantern Strong when you go through the Lantern. It's a family. I mean, there's guys, I'm the secretary at my home group, which is at the Keating Center, which is on 117th across from Home Depot. I've been the secretary there for 2.5 years. All the Lantern guys come in there. and I know them all very well. They're all very good guys. They'll take him under his wing, and it's a good place. I would recommend that. Do you have any other questions about that?
And you should go up to the family group for the lantern too. It's really, there's a lady named Missy who handles it, and it's wonderful.
If it wasn't for the treatment center, I definitely would not be where I am today. There's no way with the way my addiction was, because it's a thinking problem. I mean, they teach you how to make your bed. They teach you how to take some responsibility, do chores. Because, you know, Sandy was talking a little bit about it earlier. You start off in a halfway position where you sit through like 5-6 groups every day for 3 months. Is this his first time in treatment? So it depended on him, but up to 3 months, you sit through the group every day, and then you go to a three-quarter after that. Are you familiar how all this works? And then you pay to live there, and then you have a curfew, and you move on. It's stepping stones to move on with your life and get a support group and get some sort of program in your life and some sort of 12 steps. So I think it's a very good idea from my perspective.
My question's for Marilyn. Can you hear me? So, Marilyn, so if I look and you're 2 years past losing your second son, and you're able to come here and speak in front of people, right? Can you share a little bit about what your grief recovery looked like in these last 2 years?
I did go to see a psychologist for 6 months because my children, my daughter and my daughter-in-law would not let me see my grandchildren because they considered me unfit because my son died in the house and I didn't call the police. Then we got through that, and once I got back with the kids, I was mourning the children as much as I was mourning my son. But I do still see a psychiatrist regularly. I don't go to any group meetings, but I went through the phone book calling everybody. I like to sew dolls and doll clothes, so I make like American Girl size dolls. I get the dolls, and then I make the clothes, and I donate them to Cornerstone of Hope, which is anyone who's has suicide, murder, heroin in their lives, and they don't charge, and so they have this big gala, and they auction them off, and then I also give my things to Laura's home, which is for battered women and children. So I try to keep myself really busy. I've been very fortunate. I've had a lot of friends who understood. My one friend used to come and take me out to dinner, and I'd cry through all of dinner, and she'd go, "Oh, that's all right. If I can cry at a movie, you can certainly cry, you know, because you're in the restaurant." So, and then my son, who was a friend of Tim's, in fact, Tim was in his first year of recovery when my son died. And I know Tim's told me he regrets deeply that he was so into his own problems, but that had to be that way. I mean, you know, it wasn't, he didn't intentionally, you know, do anything. But they have all of his friends, and he was a very friendly person. I have 30 people on Facebook that send me things every day that are friends of his. How are you? How are you doing? I have one guy down the street that was a friend, calls me every single morning and every single night. He was the one that called when I ran out to get a drink of water. I mean, so it's, you do need to do something to occupy yourself. I went to a couple groups, but the first group I went to was kind of redundant. It was just the same people saying the same thing, and I wasn't getting anything out of it. We found a second group that was run by a minister whose wife had committed suicide after having a baby in the hospital. She hung herself from the shower. And he ran that program, and that was a much better fit. So, you know, if you don't like one meeting, don't give up. I mean, there's tons of them out there. And even 2 years ago, there wasn't the knowledge there is now. I mean, if I could go back 2 years, I would do the same thing. But if I knew now, 2 years ago, I would have played it a whole different way.
What was it like early on, like right after he passed away?
I didn't.
First 6 months.
Oh, well, the first 6 months, first thing is, it was in the spring, it was in May. And in the first place, I locked all my doors and windows. And my house was always open, always. I locked everything up. I had every light on at night, in and out. I sat on my front porch and cried every day, all day long.
How long did you do that? For how long were you in that stage of?
About a year. When it got cold, I just moved to the garage.
What was it that shifted for you? Because if you look at that, that would have been just a year ago, you were still in deep, deep, deep grief. And now you're where you are. What was it that you found that made the shift for you?
I think it was my grandchildren. I have to make sure, you know, that I have them, and I have to help them. If I didn't have my grandchildren, I mean, to be really honest, I mean, I've got all kinds of pills at home that I take. I could end my life tonight if I wanted, but you don't want to. You want to go on because you want to help your family.
And what sense of purpose is it that you're sewing? Because it seems like that outlet for you and helping others has been tremendous for you.
Well, I kind of feel like God is all forgiving, okay? He's very merciful. But I feel like I'm kind of paying him back for my son's stupidity. I make these things and I give them away, and, you know, and with each one that I give away, I think, please, dear God, don't have them in hell, you know, and that's what I do.
Anybody have a question?
Thank you, ma'am. That was very graceful for you to speak. I'm actually from Summit County, and Dave, Andrea, his wife, is one reason I'm here. I made a commitment. I wanted to follow through on that. And so, and I want to say, Dave, thank you, because I think it's meaningful when you said the men need to get involved. but I came up, I'm here from a church in United Methodist Church in Akron and Cuyahoga Falls, and to learn the message that's being presented here, and to take some of this information with me. And I'm just absolutely blown away by this presentation and the form that you're using as a way to educate us. And I think the church is definitely a safe place to meet. And so I want to thank Becky for putting this together. And thank all of you for everything you've had to say and sharing your life stories. Thank you.
One more thing I'd like to say is, I don't think I told you before, the people who my son was getting drugs from, the reason I was so afraid in my own home was because they were delivering them to my front door. They were putting them in the flower bed, and he would put the money, $10, in his slipper and put it on the front porch. And my 12-year-old granddaughter was the first one that realized that there was money in the slipper. So she kept taking it. So she ended up with a lot of money. But these people are so bold as to come to your own home where my children, my grandchildren are playing and putting pill bottles on my front porch. So I, you know, be careful. I would never dreamed it.
I just want to share that this is how the world runs. I grew up right next door to Marilyn for many years. My brother took her to prom, and then, you know, I was a Parma girl, she was a Parma girl, and look where we are today. You know, it's, you know, people say, well, I just heard Rocky River has a really bad area of the heroin, you need to stay away from this area. No, it's everywhere. You know, I mean, the one guy that was on TV, Aaron Marks, that's been active in the addiction awareness programs, I heard him on TV the other day. He was in college. His drug dealer said, you know, he didn't have any pills for him. So here, try this. Try this heroin. You can have it for free. And you're hooked. So I feel in my heart that until the police or maybe even the National Guard or somebody stops this, it's not going to go away. And, you know, because once they get one drug dealer, it just keeps coming in. And many people say it's our government and it's all about money. So, you know, I don't know who's going to be our next president, but I hope whomever maybe will do something good for us.
You know, it was interesting. I just had lunch today with a friend who's at 38 days in recovery now from opiates. And she was saying that she was getting her pills. And I always thought, because, you know, dumb me, is that they're all prescription. So I thought, unlike getting heroin or a drug off the street, that you knew what you were getting. So I'm asking, how do you OD when it's an opiate in pill form? And she said that, and I didn't know this, that they make them now, right? So just like you get heroin off the street, you get pills that are not manufactured, and they're lacing them with fentanyl. And you have, if you're not good, she happens to have a background that can tell the difference between them, but she said, you take the one laced with fentanyl and you're dead. And I always saw that as a heroin thing and not the opiate part. So that was, it was interesting.
That's the heroin that I found in my home. I didn't know it was heroin. I'd never seen heroin in my life before. And I went running out of the bedroom yelling, I think this is heroin. And my daughter, I mean, she's being sarcastic. She goes, wait, I'll take it downstairs and compare it with mine and we'll see. But, I mean, that was kind of funny. But the one thing I learned at one of the meetings I went to, and it was run by Cuyahoga County at all the schools, and the kids think it's real funny that, you know, that's what they told us. The kids think it's a big joke. And you just have to be so careful because, like I say, you don't know what you're taking. And the one thing they told us is when you take any of these medications, supposed medications, they were at one time, every bit of it, inside a cavity of somebody's body. And which is just disgusting, but I mean, it's just something to think about. It's every bit of it. So if you're doing it, you just think about it being up somebody's butt before you put it in yourself.
All right, were there any final questions before we wrap up? Everybody here is going to hang out in the lobby, right? For a while, so feel free to mingle around and share stories and ask questions. And Matt's going to close for us.
Can we give a round of applause to everybody who presented tonight? Not an easy thing to talk about, especially from personal experience or connections with people who are involved with addiction on any level, but I really don't hardly know a number of these people, but I feel like I don't know, I just feel like some kind of proud of them in some way or another. And I really appreciate you guys being as honest as you were and as vulnerable as you were. And I think that's what's going to start, I don't know, I guess being a contagious type of attitude that's going to cause change in people's lives. So thank you. We really appreciate that. Again, they'll be out there in the lobby, so please feel free to hang around afterward and talk and meet people and collect some papers and stuff. But again, this is part two of a three-part series. These little half sheets are outside in the lobby, right to the left on a small table. Our next session will be June 10th, which is a Friday, again at 6:30. It'll be the third and final, and we are going to be talking about addiction and the criminal justice and healthcare systems. Becky is currently lining up some speakers and presenters for that evening that are involved with hospitals and rehabilitation centers. So if you haven't already, we'll have a Facebook event posted. We have a website that has up-to-date information about this type of thing. So keep in touch. Also, our contact information is here. And we really appreciate you guys coming out tonight. Be safe. We'll look forward to talking to you after. Thank you so much.
Fickle my heart and how woozy my eyes. I struggle to find any truth in your lies. And now my heart stumbles on things I don't know.